right. The research I'm about to present I conducted while on sabbatical at Rothamsted, Phil Brooks' lab. Phil Brooks was my host, and I'm greatly appreciative of all the folks that contributed to this project. Production agriculture in the U.S. Uses mined phosphorus once, and this approach results in P ore depletion on one end, and in many cases, eutrophication on the other. As far as I can tell, this system was not developed to be ecologically rational, but rather economically expedient and successful. And it seems to me that a lot of crop and soil scientists are saddled with trying to make this system become ecologically rational, which I think is a pretty tall order. But while we're at it, why don't we ask why we use phosphorus fertilizers in the first place? I think many people think that P fertilizers are essential to maintain high yields. And yet, as this illustration from the Sanborn long-term experiments in central Missouri points out, P fertilization is primarily used to balance large P exports, which is different than maintaining productivity. In fact, right down the road from Sanborn is the Tucker Tallgrass Prairie Reserve, in which an improved prairie, if you will, maintains remarkably high net primary productivity relative to the improved wheat. And there is no fertilizer applied to this prairie ecosystem and no fertilizer or no P losses in to speak of in either erosion or harvests. So what would an agroecosystem look like if it behaved a little more like this? Well, I've been collaborating with researchers at the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas over the last 10 years, asking these types of questions. I will not talk about the prospect of developing perennial grain crops. It's not my field. I'm very interested in it. But I'm just as interested in how the soil economies of nutrient availability, forms uptake, functions may change when the ecological engineers of roots change from annual to perennial. And so to take a first step in addressing this question, I went to Hallowed Ground, Rothamsted Research in the UK. If you were here this morning, you saw Johnny Johnston speak, and he'll be speaking later on this afternoon as well. I recommend you see Johnny, a legend in his own time. But Rothamsted boasts the broadbox continuous wheat. It's been under cultivation since 1844. As an annual crop, the parkgrass hayed perennial meadow, it's been in production since longer than 1856, but has been carefully harvested and monitored since then. And Rothamsted affords a very unique situation in which four of the five soil-forming factors are held relatively constant: climate, topography, parent material, and time, while we can vary the vegetation, perennial and annual, and see how things have changed over time. Plus, Rothamsted has an invaluable set of soil archives that have been sampled in the last 150 years in these plots. So I sampled two plots in broadbox. One has never received fertilizer and is under continuous wheat production, and the other has received a full set of fertilizers of essential nutrients, including 35 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare per year. In the perennial park grass hay meadow, I sampled a comparable set of plots. And I want to point out, quite interestingly, that the nil plots, or the non-fertilized plots, export about the same amount in the wheat and the hay meadow, 5 kilograms per hectare per year, for a long time. And the fertilized plots export about the same amount of P as well, wheat and hay, 19 kilograms per hectare per year. This is the sampling protocol I used. I just want to point out that I sampled quite deep, down to 92 centimeters, with expectations of seeing the perennial roots do things at that depth. And I also want to point out that essentially when you work at Rothamsted, you're pseudo-replicating, which is one of the limitations of working there. I'm someone who has worked on chronosequence studies a lot, and so I don't have as much of a problem with this, but it is certainly a statistical limitation, both using the archives and the non-replicated plots at Rothamsted. To analyze the soils, I conducted a detailed phosphorus fractionation after Headley, as modified by Thiessen and Moore, and then I made some changes further by Blake and colleagues. And I know, although I know you'd like to hear details on each of these fractions, suffice to say that the procedure is designed to extract the surface absorbed, readily available phosphorus first, and then as you continue to extract, you get at increasingly strongly bonded phosphorus with very low availability later. And rather than show you a lot of slides that look like this, I, for your viewing pleasure, have actually grouped these fractions into functional categories of relatively high bioavailability, moderate, and quite low or fixed phosphorus, if you will, in the inorganic forms, and in the organic forms, actively cycling PO and passive organic phosphorus, or PO. So let me walk you through this figure. I'm going to show a number of these, and I'll just explain what they are right now. On the x-axis, I have these different phosphorus pools, different availabilities, from high available PI to low active PO and passive PO. And on the y-axis, micrograms of phosphorus per gram dry weight in that fraction. Here's the depth of the soil horizon. And I can't compare these bars statistically because these archive soil samples are analytical reps, and these actually contain field variation from subplots. On the left are the archive samples. In this case, the unfertilized hay meadow sampled in 1876 compared with 2009 samples sampled in exactly the same place. And what we can see here is that presumably this high available inorganic phosphorus is constantly depleted, but it's resupplied by other forms. And what we can see is that in between 1876 and 2009, the primary pools that resupplied this labile PI was the moderately available PI and the active organic phosphorus were both depleted. When we go down in the soil profile to the 47 to 69 centimeter depth, you see very little depletion of any of the phosphorus pools at that depth. This is under perennial vegetation. It's quite surprised. A little bit of the moderate PO, but apparently the low fertility of these sites prevents the roots from exploiting deep in the profile. When I did these same analyses on the broadbock wheat, I saw basically the opposite what I expected to. The surface horizon between 1893 and 2009 show no substantial depletion of any of the soil phosphorus fractions, whereas the wheat appears to be obtaining the vast majority of its phosphorus from deeper in the profile. Again, these have never been fertilized. This is endogenous nutrient supply. So that was surprising. Another very surprising thing to me was that the main pool that does seem to be supplying the offtake of phosphorus from the system is the most recalcitrant inorganic phosphorus pool. And so it underscores what Johnny Johnston said this morning about the reversibility of irreversibly fixed phosphorus. It does seem to be available over time. The last thing I need to point out here is the substantial organic phosphorus pool in the perennial system versus a much lower PO pool in the annual wheat. Sorry for these busy slides, but this is the exact same scenario, except these are deeper samples here still, and this is in the fertilized plots of the perennial hay meadow versus the annual wheat. And what we can see is that virtually all of the pools of phosphorus in the surface horizon have been enriched over time, which is not surprising. What is surprising is, A, that the roots have penetrated down in this system to deep in the subsoil in both the annual wheat and the perennial meadow, And that, in fact, even though it's heavily fertilized, they have ultimately been depleted over time. So you have low PI, that same pool of phosphorus is being depleted deep. Phosphorus is not leaching down to the subsoil, but the roots are getting there. It's interesting. Finally, I also want to point out again, this organic phosphorus pool is very substantial here, and it's not substantial here. To underscore that point, it does appear as though there is a trade-off going on between phosphorus being held in this active organic pool. It's high in the perennial meadow and relatively low in the annual wheat, both in the fertilized and the, unfertilized and the fertilized plots. High active PO, low PO. And in contrast, the so-called fixed or tightly bonded inorganic phosphorus is low, relatively low, in the hay meadow versus the annual wheat, where it's high, low, and high. So what I'm getting at is that clearly, not surprisingly in some respects, the perennial system relies to a much greater extent on the cycling of organic phosphorus in its economy than the annual wheat. And this is the last data I'll show, and that is biomass, microbial biomass, PO, as a function of depth in the annual, in the annual wheat here versus the perennial meadow here. And look at the x-axes. They are almost in an order of magnitude different. And so clearly, this is part of that organic pool we were seeing, and I was pointing out earlier, in the hay meadow sites. And it persists even when there is considerable fertilization. So to conclude, to a striking degree, perennial and annual crops access different forms of P at different depths in the soil profile here at Rothamsted, or there at Rothamsted. The apparent ability for the perennial crop to maintain P in actively cycling organic forms rather than strongly bound and relatively unavailable inorganic forms represents one mechanism that may reduce the need for fertilizer inputs. And finally, these two agroecosystems clearly function differently, and it will be exciting to explore these differences further. Thank you.